It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Operation of Ramadi runs into difficulty. Iraqi forces continue meeting resistance as they try to tighten their grip on the provincial capital Ramadi, wrested from Islamic State control this week. The Iraqis are said to be encountering pockets of resistance and sporadic attacks. James Jeffrey is a former diplomat now at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy.
We've seen this before in battles such as Tikrit and to some degree Beji, which go back and forth. This city is primarily under the control of Iraqi forces at this point. They have a huge numerical superiority. They hold terrain, and while only a small percent of their forces are good in attacking ISIS, most of the forces in there can hold terrain once they've gotten in there. So they're just going to continue squeezing the ISIS people, and they will eventually be driven out.
There are also concerns the militants will try to hide among Ramadi's population. More than 50 families trapped inside the city said IS fighters use them as human shields. The outgoing UN envoy to Somalia, Nicholas Kay, says the country has an unstoppable momentum toward being stable and secure.
I believe that Somalia in the last 2.5-3 years has made significant political progress and has also made some reasonable security progress as well. And so I am optimistic that in 2016 there is an unstoppable momentum now.
Kay told VOA Somalia has managed to convert a dream of being a federal Somalia into reality. The country now has 5 interim regional administrations and federal member states, which he says brings government and accountability closer to the people. Elections scheduled in the new year. This is VOA News. The mayor of Brussels has canceled the Belgian capital's annual New Year's Eve celebration over concerns of possible terror attacks. He said it's impossible to screen all of tens of thousands who were expected to turn out for fireworks and other festivities. Meanwhile, Paris has tightened security but says it will proceed with its New Year's Eve celebration. And thousands of police officers will be guarding the massive New Year's celebration in New York City's Times Square. But authorities say there are no specific credible threats to New York or any other U.S. cities. The U.N. Refugee Agency Wednesday said more than 1 million refugees and migrants braved the high seas this year, seeking sanctuary in Europe from war and poverty. Adrian Edwards is the spokesman of the U.N. High Commissioner for Refugees.
This is a staggering increase over just 12 months. At the end of 2014, we had 219,000 arrivals on the Mediterranean to Europe. That was already a record. This is almost 5 times that level. In addition, tragically, we're also seeing an increase in the number of deaths, almost 4,000 lives lost in 2015.
Europe is in the midst of the biggest mass migration since the Second World War. Meanwhile, a German newspaper says Germany will have registered just over 1 million migrants by year's end, 5 times more than last year. Voters went to the polls in Central African Republic Wednesday at a much-delayed election that many hope will end nearly 3 years of sectarian violence. There were no serious clashes or irregularities reported. Some among the tens of thousands of refugees also cast ballots, including Abdul Karim Carvalho at a refugee camp in Cameroon.
Now, today, you can see everybody is so excited because we need change in our country. So the situation whereby Central African Republic came today to install our new president. So we need changes in our country.
Nearly 2 million were registered to vote, choosing among some 30 presidential candidates and a host of those seeking office in the legislature. The U.S. is urging Ethiopia to free all journalists detained by the state and stop using its controversial anti-terror law to silence dissent. A National Security Council spokesman said Wednesday the U.S. is, quote, deeply concerned by the recent arrests of other journalists in Ethiopia. He urged the government to free journalists and all others in prison for exercising their right to free expression. In the Philippines, at least one soldier and 8 gunmen were killed in clashes Wednesday between security forces and al-Qaeda-linked militants believed to be holding foreign hostages. The clash occurred at a remote southern island, Jolo, where gunmen from the Islamist militant group Abu Sayyaf are believed to be holding 2 Canadians, a Norwegian, and a female Filipina. The status of the hostages, unclear. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 31st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Central African Republic awaits results from Wednesday's important presidential vote.
Some logistical difficulties were expected, says Suleiman Ndjaye, the head of the African Union Electoral Observation Mission. After those are solved, the vote is going smoothly, he says.
That's VOA correspondent Katarina Hoyer in Bangui. The African Union is committed to helping the Central African Republic return to constitutional rule. Zimbabweans are critical of their president for going on holidays abroad, while most civil servants have not been paid. And the Guinean opposition leader is promising cooperation with President Conde's government.
We discussed the possibility, you know, to have a new agreement among our two parties and to see during these 5 years coming if we can help our country, you know, to have more growth and more possibility for the population.
Sidya Touré is a former prime minister and leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party in Guinea, and Americans and tourists will share their New Year's resolutions. The stories plus Marco Woman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Central African Republic awaits results from Wednesday's important presidential and parliamentary elections that they hope will end years of sectarian violence. The turnout was huge, but voting in some areas was marred by widespread logistical problems and claims of vote rigging. But as Katarina Hoyer reports from Bangui, the post-election period might also be difficult to manage.
Expectations were high in Bangui ahead of Wednesday's vote. Outside one polling station in the neighborhood of Castor, near the city center, impatient voters hoping to turn a page on the country's three-year-long conflict lined up before dawn. Jean-Philippe Dora, a lawyer, said the population was ready for change. Dora says over the last 3 years, life has been suspended. People live in poverty. He says that is why we have to choose the right leader, someone who can reconcile and reunite the country and bring hope to the population. Voters at some stations had to wait an extra hour or two due to last-minute logistical problems. We were supposed to open at 6 a.m., says Bienvenu Gubangi, an electoral worker manning a polling station. He says because the material arrived late, the truck didn't bring it here, so the polling station opened later. He says they will catch up. The electoral code says the station should be open for 10 hours. Even if they have to stay open late, everyone will be able to vote. The same determination to vote was seen during the constitutional referendum on December 13th. This time, however, much more is at stake. The new government will inherit a country in which sectarian violence remains rife and rebels and militia groups have yet to be disarmed. It will also have to determine how to assist the estimated 450,000 Central Africans, most of them Muslims, who remain refugees outside of the country. Another 460,000 are displaced within the country, among them 36,000 Muslims that are living in enclaves. In a country still awash in weapons, tensions between the majority Christian population and the minority Muslim population remain a great concern. Some minor problems with the voting were reported in Bangui Wednesday, but after some initial problems, the majority of voters were able to cast their ballots. Some logistical difficulties were expected, says Suleiman Ndjaye, the head of the African Union Electoral Observation Mission. After those were solved, the vote is going smoothly, he says. UN peacekeepers and local police protected polling stations in Bangui. Outside the capital, some polling stations are only reachable by boat or motorbike, making security and observation much more difficult. Among the 30 presidential candidates, three are considered frontrunners. Two of them, Martin Sigele and Anissa Dologele, were prime ministers under late President Ange-Félix Patassé. The third, Karim Mekaswa, is a Muslim who served as a minister under President François Bozizé until he was ousted in 2013 by Seleka rebels. Katrina Hoye for VOA News, Bangui.
The African Union's Peace and Security Council will meet soon to decide when to lift its suspension of the Central African Republic once a legitimate president is chosen and inaugurated. The country was suspended following the 2013 overthrow of President François Bozizé and the subsequent turmoil, which forced rebel leader turned president Michel Djotodia to resign. Commissioner for Political Affairs, Aisha Laraba Abdullahi, says the African Union is committed to its principle of zero tolerance for unconstitutional change of elected governments. In this interview with reporter Peter Clarty, Commissioner Abdullahi voiced hope for a peaceful future for the Central African Republic.
We are confident that the end of the transition in the Central African Republic is coming to an end. And this will hopefully usher in peace, stability and prosperity to the Central African Republic.
The return to constitutional rule in the Central African Republic, how does that play into the AU's quest to ensure constitutionality among member states on the continent, and how will the AU help in this directive?
Well, our instruments, our normative framework are very strong, and we have zero tolerance to unconstitutional changes. We have taken very strict and serious measures on our member states that have violated our instruments. And currently, you know, the Central African Republic is still under suspension because of the coup d'etat that took place in that country. And we insist that Africa must be governed and governed properly, that constitutionalism and rule of law should be upheld. But we hope that whoever is elected as the next president of the Central African Republic will ensure further stability in that richly endowed country that has been pillaged and has suffered over a period of time.
Will the African Union help whoever is elected as president? Will the AU help that person in entrenching democracy and the gradual steps the country needs to take to return the country to constitutional rule and to restore peace, law and order?
Our engagement with the Central African Republic would not just remain with the elections. After the elections, we should support the country to rebuild its institutions. As you know, this is one country that was degraded to the extent that most of the institutions have stopped to function. There were gross human rights violations, and most of the things that you would take for granted in other countries were inexistent in the Central African Republic for quite some time. So it's a lot of work to be done, but we remain committed to support this country to return to normalcy after the elections.
How long do you think the suspension that the AU has imposed on the Central African Republic will be lifted now that it appears that the people want constitutional rule?
I'm going by our tradition and practice as the AU. As soon as a legitimate president is elected and inaugurated, the African Union Peace and Security Council will meet and the suspension of the country will be lifted automatically. So it's just a matter of time.
Aisha Laraba Abdullahi is the African Union's Commissioner for Political Affairs. She spoke with viewers Peter Clarty from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. A Guinean opposition leader is promising cooperation with President Alpha Conde in the president's second term on how to improve the country's economy. Former Prime Minister Sidya Touré of the Union of Republican Forces Party has been a critic of Mr. Conde's government, at times describing the economy in the president's first term as marred by recession and unemployment. Now, Mr. Touré said his decision to collaborate with the government followed a meeting he had with President Conde on December 5th, during which he said they discussed the possibility of how best their two parties can work together during Mr. Conde's second term to grow the economy. Asked why the sudden change of mind, Mr. Touré said the Guinea opposition has had no strategy to change the government.
I had a meeting with President Conde on 5th of December, and we discussed the possibility, to have a new agreement among our two parties, and to see during these 5 years coming if we can help our country, to have more growth and more possibility for the population, because the last 5 years were wasted. And in my opinion, we have to go to a form of consensus, to help the country to go forward. And that can help, I think, for the next election in 2020.
So are you saying, Mr. Touré, that you have discussed with the president, your party and his party should come together?
This is not what I'm going to say, because I have my own group in the parliament, and I will be a center at this time, And our decision in our party is to give more and more advice to this government and more help to change things, because really you see that during the 5 years, you know, from 2010 to 2015, we have a recession in the country. So we didn't have a strategy in the former opposition. And I think if you don't have a strategy, you have nothing to propose to the country. So we're going to have more discussion with the government, you know, more possibility to collaborate and, you know, to help to go forward, in, especially in economic way.
The collaboration you're talking about, this is just your party, not the entire opposition.
No, it's just my party. I can engage only my own party, you know.
So why the change? You were critical of the president at times. Why the change?
Because in opposition, we have no strategy to change the regime. We have only the same way, and this way is a dead end.
Can we say that Sidi Touré is tired fighting the establishment and he wants to join the establishment?
No, this is not the exact way. Sidi Touré is absolutely tired to see, but there is no strategy and opposition to have an alternative for this government.
President Alpha Conde has appointed a new prime minister, Mamadi Yula. What do you make of that? What's your reaction to that appointment?
So I say I know this gentleman, and I hope he can help. But, you know, the real problem in Guinea is not to appoint somebody. It's to have, you know, a group who can work all together and to have determination to make the reforms. And on this way, I hope that this gentleman can help. On this way, I'm waiting to the president, you know, for the composition of the new government to say if he really want to go in this direction.
Sidi Touré is a former Guinean prime minister and leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party. He was speaking with me from Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. Today is Thursday, December 31st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, and Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is 18 minutes past the hour. Ordinary Zimbabweans have criticized President Robert Mugabe and wife Grace for going on holidays in the Far East, while most Zimbabweans say they are unable to enjoy the festive season as they have either not been paid or have no money to do so due to the prevailing harsh economic environment. Irvin Chifera of View Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
Most Zimbabweans have described President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace as irresponsible, saying going on holiday abroad when the majority of the population is wallowing in poverty showed they did not care about struggling local people. Harare resident Moses Chungwa said it was unfair for the president to go outside the country when people are suffering.
How can you go to for a holiday while this country is suffering? It's not good for us.
Another local resident, Andrew Piri, said it was unacceptable of the president to go abroad, especially after he had acknowledged at a party he held for senior government officials that the economic situation in the country was not good. He said while the president is entitled to an annual holiday, he should enjoy it locally, given the prevailing economic situation in the country.
Locally, there are so many resort areas where he can even enjoy with his family than to carry a biggest contingent of about 200 people going to the Far East.
John Moyo, also of Harare, said the timing of the president's holiday to the Far East was wrong, given that most people in the country are suffering and did not enjoy Christmas holidays.
The economy is on its knees. The country is almost cash dry. I'm sure the president could have remained in the country, though on leave, attending to some of the urgent issues like civil servants' salaries, civil servants' bonuses. But when the leader of a nation chooses to go out and enjoy himself with his family, I see it as being very, very arrogant.
But political commentator and Great Zimbabwe University lecturer Joel Makusha said there was nothing wrong with the president's leave as long as it was budgeted for. He said it was proper for President Mugabe to go on leave so that he comes back rejuvenated to deal with the many challenges affecting the nation. His views were echoed by ZANU-PF Central Committee member and parliamentarian Joseph Chuma, who said the president has a right to go on holiday even if some civil servants have not yet been paid.
The point is that even if he's here, are they going to be paid because he's here? That's the fundamental question that you must ask yourself. The responsible minister is running around mobilizing resources so that all civil servants are paid. And so it doesn't really need the president to be in office. I mean, for that to happen.
Chuma noted that the government is still functioning in the absence of President Mugabe. Mr. Mugabe traditionally takes his leave during this time of the year and usually spends it in the Far East, where he also goes for medical checkups. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, estimates 10 million people became sick and 1.5 million died in 2014 as a result of a multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis. Without an effective and aggressive treatment strategy, the CDC estimates the number of cases could rise to 75 million worldwide by 2050. Jessica Burma reports.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, estimates 10 million people became sick and 1.5 million died in 2014 as a result of multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. Without an effective and aggressive treatment strategy, the CDC estimates the number of cases could rise to 75 million worldwide by 2050.
If we don't act promptly, if we don't act now, then the problem of drug-resistant TB will just get worse.
Peter Sigelski is team leader for drug-resistant TB and infection control in the global TB branch at the CDC. He explains that when someone is infected with multidrug-resistant or MDR TB, the bacterium that causes the disease does not respond to two gold standard drugs for treating the illness, isoniazid and rifampicin. So doctors turn to a cocktail of many more expensive but less effective drugs. How many drugs should be in that cocktail was the focus of a study led by Sigelski. Currently, the World Health Organization recommends that five drugs be administered simultaneously. But the study, conducted at 26 sites in 9 countries, found that using 6 drugs could provide a necessary boost in efforts to defeat MDR-TB. Participating countries included Russia, South Africa, Taiwan, and Estonia. Among the 1,100 adult patients in the study with MDR-TB, those who received 6 potentially effective drugs saw a 36% greater likelihood of responding to treatment compared to those who received 5 or fewer drugs. The findings were published in the journal PLOS Medicine. Sigelski says conducting pre-treatment testing also helped to determine which drugs were most likely to be effective against resistant TB infections.
So it was clear from this work that more testing for drug resistance, and especially testing for the full range of drug resistance, would be important so that physicians can choose the most effective drugs based on those laboratory results.
Sigelski says the WHO is now encouraging doctors around the world to do drug sensitivity testing prior to treating their MDR-TB patients. Meanwhile, the Obama administration unveiled an action plan to bring resources to bear in the prompt identification and treatment of patients infected with multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
At midnight on Thursday, December 31st, Americans and many others around the world will usher in a brand new year. On the National Mall in Washington, locals and visitors alike share with viewers some of their hopes and resolutions for 2016.
world becomes a better place and my family becomes better too.
It just seems like everyone's so angry all the time, and we need to find peace again within ourselves.
Peace for all the world. My parents is back home in Afghanistan. I wish I can bring them here or having a healthy life.
Get better grades.
Travel more, work less.
Get healthy, so spend more time walking and spending more time with family.
Get better at karate.
Lose a little bit of weight, gain some more muscle, and, you know, become a better person.
Be healthy. Peace.
That report was compiled by VOA's Julie Tabor. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Margo Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Candidates for the FIFA presidential elections are invited for a live television debate. The American global cable and satellite television channel ESPN disclosed in Bristol, Connecticut State in the United States of America. The five candidates for the FIFA presidential elections due on the 26th of February are Jordanian Prince Ali bin Al Hussein, Bahrain's Sheikh Salman bin Ibrahim Al Khalifa, Frenchman Jerome Champagne, Switzerland's Gianni Infantino, and South African Tokyo Sekwale. According to ESPN, their objective is to provide a forum for open and transparent discussion about the future governance of football ahead of the FIFA presidential elections. The debate is scheduled for the 29th of January in the British capital, London. Meanwhile, former French football captain Michel Platini may find himself in hot waters with FIFA after attending the Global Soccer Awards in Dubai, United Arab Emirates on Sunday. Platini, who until recently was FIFA vice president, along with disgraced FIFA president Sepp Blatter, were banned from all football activities for 8 years. According to the FIFA Ethics Committee, Platini and Blatter were found guilty of breaching the FIFA Code of Ethics with regards to a $2 million payment Blatter made to Platini in 2011. Still with FIFA, Uruguay's former FIFA vice president Eugenio Figueiredo is alleged to have received monthly bribes from Argentine sports marketing companies, a court in the Uruguay capital Montevideo disclosed. According to court documents, Figueiredo, who has been South America Football Confederation CONMEBOL president, is alleged to have received each month a $50,000 bribe besides his $40,000 pay as CONMEBOL president. Argentine sports marketing companies Full Play and Tornados y Competencias are alleged to have bribed Figueiredo in return for a monopoly of television sales rights for various South American tournaments. Figueiredo is among 15 top FIFA officials arrested at a luxury hotel in Zurich, Switzerland in May. He is among 25 former and current top FIFA officials under investigation by the United States Department of Justice. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United States has urged Ethiopia to free all journalists detained by the state and stop using its controversial anti-terror law to silence dissent. National Security Council spokesman Ned Price said on Wednesday the U.S. is deeply concerned by the recent arrests of other journalists in Ethiopia. He urged the Ethiopian government to release journalists and all others imprisoned for exercising their right to free expression. Voters went to the polls in the Central African Republic on Wednesday in a much-delayed election that many hope will end 3 years of violence in the troubled country. Long lines of voters turned out in the capital, Bangui, and although some polling stations opened late, there were no reported clashes or major irregularities. That's it for this Thursday, December 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Next on Reporters Roundtable. Join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable. I'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the state of press freedom in Africa in the year 2015. So please join us on Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.